Welcome to the Modern Law Library podcast. I'm your host, Matt Reynolds, a legal affairs writer with the ABA Journal. I'm joined today by best-selling novelist Meg Gardner to talk about her recent bestseller, Heat 2, a collaboration with writer and director Michael Mann. Hi, Meg. How are you doing today?
I'm great. Thanks for having me. It's good to be here.
Yeah, thanks very much. So yeah, I guess I'll stop by asking. We all know that Heat is a beloved 90s heist movie. So where does your story pick up the novel, the Heat sequel or prequel? Or both? It's both, actually, isn't it?
Yes, Heat 2, the novel, is a prequel and sequel to Heat, the movie. It picks up the story literally the day after the film ends. So the film is about cops and robbers. It is a crime saga about a master thief, Neil McCauley, and his crew who take down high stakes scores, and the relentless detective from LAPD robbery homicide who hunts him, Vincent Hanna. And the movie, this is not a huge spoiler, ends with a huge bank robbery shootout on the streets of Los Angeles, and only one person surviving from the crew, and not everybody from the cops either. So the film ends on that dramatic note. The novel opens the next morning with the lone survivor of the crew, Chris Chehurlis, who's played by Val Kilmer in the film, waking up with a terrible gunshot wound, barely alive, desperate to escape LA with the cops hot on his trail. Hanna is manic to capture or kill him before he can get out of the city. Chris knows that he has to save not only himself, but to protect his family, his wife and child. He has to get out, go away, possibly never, ever see them again. And that launches the story. And it then goes back 7 years to Chicago, where we meet the crew, the entire crew, Neil McCauley, played by Robert De Niro in the film. They're planning a huge tunnel heist in Chicago. Hanna is working there coincidentally as a detective with the Chicago Police Department. That storyline takes off, and the novel goes back and forth in time from before the events of Heat to the years afterwards, from when Chris escapes, manages to be smuggled out of the United States to Paraguay and recover and figure out how on earth he's going to survive there and whether he can ever get back with his family, what he's going to do with himself. And it goes on into the future with up to the new millennium, where everything comes together.
I should ask you about that famous street scene, that like shootout in LA. I went to the cinema to see Heat, and that really kind of is seared in my mind, that scene, because it's kind of a breathtaking sequence, isn't it? And I just wondered, like, did the movie leave the same impression on you? And how exciting was it to work on, you know, something that was so revered from in film history?
The movie is, I came to it completely unaware, like so many of us did, just, you know, watching it and just, you know, finding my hair getting blown back by the entire film. Being asked to work with Michael Mann, who wrote and directed the film and is obviously a legendary filmmaker, an icon of mine, and to find out that he wanted to expand the world of Heat, that he had more stories that he wanted to tell, that he wanted to write it as a novel, and to work with, to collaborate with a novelist, to bring that to the page was exciting and extremely daunting, of course. Working with your icon on a project with characters who had now kind of entered the pantheon as far as crime films and stories, you know, the movies in the Criterion Collection, that has mega fans, it has people who can recite every line and detail, and knowing that we were going to do more with them. I mean, Michael had always known where these characters had come from, and he envisioned where the survivors he hoped might go, and he wanted to see what was going to happen. And I was extremely excited by that possibility. But of course, you take a deep breath. You realize it's going to be a huge responsibility, that you have to do justice and honor to the work and live up to the creator's ambitions for the project. But I've always wanted to write a heist story. So what was I going to do? I threw myself on it, like diving out of an airplane, hoping that the parachute was going to open. And it seems it did.
Was it daunting? And I should ask, like, how did it all begin, you know, working with Michael Mann on this project?
He had seen this as a project that he wanted to do for years, and thought about writing it as a novel. And he's an extremely accomplished and brilliant writer. Until now, all his work had been on, you know, for film and television. He had collaborated extremely successfully on a number of films and was generously open to when he moved into a new arena, so to speak, that he wanted to work with someone who had experience, you know, putting the story down on the page in the form of, you know, 400 pages of prose. We share a literary agent. So at that point, he'd read my novel Unsub and was interested in speaking to me about working on the project. So I said, let's talk. And at that point, you know, he had his years of thoughts. He had outlines, he had notes, he had character bios that he had written for the film, extensive character biographies for the major characters that did not appear on, I mean, none of this material appeared on screen, but he gave it to the actors so it would inform their performances. So he already had a rich sense of story that could come before the movie. And he had some really thrilling ideas for how their worlds would collide and develop in the years before and after. So I did take a deep breath because it was a really ambitious project, really broad in scope. I'd written 15 thrillers. They've been extremely well received and successful. They also tend to be very limited in scope as far as time and location, you know, maybe taking place over a week or 10 days, so mostly in a narrow geographical area. And here, Michael had an idea for a story that spanned decades and continents. So that bit was daunting, working with someone who had a reputation as an exacting, not taskmaster, but an exacting creative style for research, for getting the story exactly right to have the absolute pounding maximum impact emotionally can on the audience. I knew that I was going to have to bring my A game, my A++ game every single day. But I thought, when am I ever going to get another chance to dive into a world of story that I, along with millions of others, love so much, and to work with the creator to bring it to life. And it was thrilling. Michael's all the legends about his proclivities for research are accurate. If you want to find out how to perform a tunnel heist in a Chicago bank, you better get a bank robber on the phone and chat with them for a couple of hours to find out.
You did that.
Yes. Yeah. Retired bank robber, let me say. Paid his debt to society and was extremely thoughtful and helpful to us. If you want to know what the night scene is like in South LA, you'd better ride out with the LAPD at midnight sometime to see what's happening on the streets. So we did all that. But as a writer, he's imaginative, demanding on himself, and very generous and open-minded as a collaborator, which is wonderful.
I should ask you, like, why did he decide to do this as a novel? You know, because Hollywood loves like an existing property, doesn't it? Like, why didn't he like dive straight into, you know, trying to get a sequel made for film or TV? I know, like, this, given the scope of the story, it actually feels like it could be a TV show. But did he talk to you about that at all?
By the time we started working together, he had already had this firmly in mind. So I don't know what originally sparked his interest in it, but he's done so much else. Why not write a novel?
And did he say why he wanted? Because I know, like, he was already a remake, wasn't it, of a TV film that he did, LA Takedown. It was a reimagining of that, right?
Yes. It's interesting. He'd written a script for Heat long before the film was ever made. It didn't seem to be going anywhere for a while. So, but television networks were interested in having him produce a series. So he had a script for Heat, and he said, well, let's see what would happen if this was a TV pilot. And he cut it down and filmed it as the pilot for what would have been a TV show, LA Takedown. And you can find that. You can find that on YouTube if you're really interested. It did not become a television series, but it became sort of his test run for what the movie might be. And he realized he wanted it to be a big movie of a piece. So that's how he went back to deciding he wanted to make Heat. And thank goodness that he did, because it's a marvel.
Is this the first time you've collaborated with someone else on a novel? And what was that like? What was that whole experience like?
It was the first time I've collaborated on a novel. And again, that's when you take a deep breath. I mean, I'm used to working on my own material at my own pace. Of course, as a novelist, you collaborate in a sense when you submit your work to your agent and editors, and you get plenty of feedback. But it's all the creations in your own head. So coming into a world where we're expected to be true to the characters that Michael had already created, that I knew that I was going to have to really figure out how to get into his mind and into their world in a way that I hadn't before. Of course, you still get the joy of creating the rest of the cast, the rest of the stories. There are new characters, there are whole new worlds that you go into, and you have to feel your way back and forth with any collaborator, I think, kind of testing the waters, you know, tossing ideas back and forth and outlines and emails and hours long phone calls and seeing how it works. And then you just have to, I thought, you know, at this point, I'm just going to have to say, let me take a crack at a few chapters and see what you think, because if he didn't care for it, then we needed to find out sooner rather than later. So I wrote the opening chapters, at least a rough draft. And he said, yeah, let's go. So it started off with us each kind of, you know, writing a chunk of an outline or a chunk of the rough draft. The longer we worked together, the smoother it became, the more aligned we became. And eventually by the end of the process, we were swapping chapters, swapping scenes, sending, here's an email with that paragraph rewritten again. What do you think? It became extremely enmeshed. I don't think there's a word in the novel we haven't both hashed over, spit on, rubbed, shined, discarded, whatever.
Did you have like a system in place? Was it like, I'll write one chapter, you write the second, and we'll go back and forth? Was it as simple as that? Or was it more kind of organic than that?
It was more organic than that, in part because we were just sort of, hashing our way through the weeds, figuring out how best to work together. And in part because we started writing in the depths of COVID, when we could not get together and talk about it. So I was at my home in Austin, he was in Los Angeles, and then he was in Japan for months filming Tokyo Vice. So at that point, I was like, I'll take this huge chunk of the rough draft. Let's get something on the page. And then he went over it, which I found was more helpful than, I know some collaborators do swap, you know, I'll write this chapter, I'll write that chapter, I'll write a chapter with this character as the protagonist, you know, as the point of view character, and you write those. But we both wanted to have a singular voice for the novel, so we didn't separate anything out.
Okay, well, let's take a quick break to hear from our sponsors.
Delegate out those tasks that take up your time. Staffy can help you with your legal, administrative, marketing, and even client-facing workload. Hiring Staffy's top-notch bilingual virtual staff means Staffy does the recruiting, hiring, and training for you. Then, if you need a change, Staffy handles it. You get to concentrate on your strategic work. Schedule a free consultation at staffy.cc. That's STAFI.cc, and get $500 off with code HAPPY24.
I'm here with Meg Gardner to talk about her novel, Heat 2. So Meg, I should ask you, what do you feel like you learned from working with Michael Mann? And what do you think like he learned from you about like novel writing?
I learned that I could clear the bar on such an extremely ambitious project. You might think your own work is terrific or not so terrific, and you're never sure what's going to happen until it goes out to readers and reviewers, and you bite your knuckles and you hold your breath. And he debuted at number one on the New York Times bestseller list. So readers certainly seemed to get it, which is a thrill beyond all thrills. I learned how to tackle such an ambitious project. I think that is it. I learned how to collaborate with another writer. I learned how, when you trust a writing partner, that is the greatest gift you can find, because that means if you are if you think something is working, but your partner tells you it's not, and you trust that they are exceptionally qualified and experienced and that their honesty is not tied up in, you know, poking you for the sake of poking you, then you take a look and realize that they are right, that you can that you really can go back and do something that's better. You could take another pass at it. You can get it there. Of course, seeing how he worked with his vast decades of experience, especially in television, to see how he structures a story or a section of the book. That, you know, let's imagine how we would divide this up if this was an hour of television, and we know where we're starting, we know where we want to end. Let's figure out how we get the characters from the end back to the beginning to make sure that it all holds together. And understanding his exacting commitment to the emotional authenticity of the story and of the characters, to really get to know these people, that a deep dive into the worlds where the story takes place was revealing and so rewarding in the end, to know what to find out that Vincent Hanna, the Al Pacino character, how he came to become a hunter, essentially, after growing up in the Midwest and finding himself at the Battle of Hue as a 19-year-old Marine, and figuring out why his life seemed to be so unsatisfying, that he was always running from something towards something, that eventually he realizes that the running is what drives him, the hunt itself. And to take Chris Chehurlis, the Val Kilmer character, and see where he come, instead of becoming the lieutenant in this bank robbery crew, how he figures out what's next in crime and for himself, and how he has to become a more mature man on the wrong side of the law, shall we say. But how is he going to do that? And how are we going to develop that character into someone that is a leading man, so to speak, on the page, the protagonist that readers will grab hold of and ride through hell with? It was exciting.
Do you think he learned anything from you?
I would hope so. I mean, he's got a degree in English. He initially thought he might want to write before he turned to film and writing through film. So he realized that he knew that novels are a different discipline, that the screenplays are more lean, that their word count is for a 2-hour screenplay is much lower than for a 400-page novel. So how to pace a scene in prose, how you have to, you don't have the actors react, you know, their performance visually in front of you. So how much do you portray on the screen through prose a character's inner monologue versus just having an actor's face show what they're thinking. Learning how to pace that, how to pace scenes, how to set up a section for a sequence, and know how to keep a reader engaged emotionally when you don't have a soundtrack, you don't have the visuals, that how you translate to that to the page, is something that he picked up really quickly, naturally.
And I should ask you, like, how did it all begin for you getting into this, into becoming a best-selling author, which I know didn't come straight away, but how did the novel writing start?
It started like everybody else. I wanted to write. And I listened to my parents when I said I'd love to be a writer. My dad, who was an English professor, said, "That's great, honey." My parents never discouraged me, but they said, "That's fantastic. Go for your dreams." Now, are you going to go for your dreams when you are like working the late shift at Denny's? Or are you going to do them like perhaps on evenings and weekends when you're practicing law? So I got, okay, I get it. So I did go, you know, I went to law school. I practiced commercial litigation at a firm in Los Angeles. Never stopped thinking that I wanted to write at some point. What happened, of course, is that when I did start to write fiction, I thought it was going to be super simple because, heck, I wrote every day. All you do is write. And as a lawyer, as a trial lawyer, you're in the business of narrative, in a sense, that every legal action is a story of something that has broken down between characters. It's a tale of conflict. And your job as an advocate is to present your client's story in the most persuasive manner you can to the judge or the jury. So as lawyers, we're trained to bring out the compelling elements of client's story in a case. That doesn't translate to writing fiction. I was shocked to discover that it is a completely different discipline. And you can't just sit down and write a novel, that it's an overwhelming project. And all of the ideas that you have for starting a story, they sound cute in your head. And then on the page, they sort of just flop about like fish out of water. And you have to learn how to put them together and turn all your great characters and bits of banter into more than that. You have to have a plot. You have to have conflict. You have to have gripping stakes. You know, is it life and death? And I've always loved thrillers. I have always, from the time I was a kid, I loved big stories with where life and death is at stake, adventure, the roller coaster, the heart pounding, high octane sense of pulse pounding excitement. So that's what I wanted to write, and took me years to figure out how to do it in a way that was publishable. But I haven't looked back.
How did you figure it out? Did anything change in your life that helped you do that, to get to that place?
I had some time eventually to try it out. When our children were very young, my husband was offered a job in London, and we knew that was an opportunity that doesn't come along every day. So we jumped on it as a family. That also meant that I went without a job, and I had no plans to requalify as a solicitor in the UK. All the kids were out of diapers and at least in preschool for a couple hours a day. And I knew that, I said, it's time to put up or shut up. If I can't use this opportunity as the time to try to write, then I'm never going to do it. So I did. I managed to get an agent with a first novel, which kind of made a lot of rounds and, got some polite pats on the back. And I thought it was the greatest thing ever. And then when I really just started reading and reading and reading, figuring out why the thrillers and suspense novels that I read, that I loved, why they worked, what didn't work, and realized, like I said, you need a plot, you need huge conflict, you need to get rid of your sense that you are the greatest little thing that's ever come along. And it's not your mommy that's going to be looking at this, deciding if they want to give you a contract and publish it. You really have to clear the bar. So I didn't do an MFA or anything like that. Just a lot of reading some seminars, and just sitting down and telling myself, I'm going to get this right. So it's practice. It's just practice and learning how to be ruthless with yourself and really be honest with what you've put on the page. The first novel went, it kind of sat around. And so I wrote another one called China Lake that sold in 72 hours because I had decided to stop messing about.
Well, let's take a quick break to hear from our sponsors. I'm here with Meg Gardner to talk about her novel, Heat 2. I should ask you, like, with your background in law, did you ever think, oh, I'm going to, because so many authors I speak to that have got a law background, they naturally go into the legal thriller mode. Why did you kind of decide that wasn't for you, that you wanted to not go down that path?
I had ideas for stories that were tangential to the law, but I wasn't crazy about the idea of setting a story in a courtroom. I saw stories that bumped up against crime and punishment, but the tales that I was really excited by didn't turn on a cross-examination or a jury verdict. So I started off with a character who was a lawyer, but because I felt that was kind of a safe handhold. That's like a baby step. Evan Delaney is a lawyer. But the story that's in her series is not about any cases that she's working on. So that's how I kind of inched my way out into the world of characters in crime inflected stories. I just wanted to have fun. Come on.
and what about your process? Like, has your process evolved over the years? And how do you get it done these days? How do you crank the work out?
It has evolved, and it's, I had to learn to crank. When you are thinking, I want to write a novel, you can take as many months or years to create it as you want. I did take almost 3 years to write China Lake because I thought it had to be as polished as, you know, as if I'd gotten some kind of an angle grinder and shined it up like a diamond to send it out to publishers. And you had the time to go over every single last word and adjective and stare at it for an hour if you needed to. Then I was offered a contract, which was fantastic, for 2 books, and I was thrilled about it. And of course, the first thing the editor says is, can you give us a sequel to this? And I say, oh, in my mind, I'm going, oh, what? Yeah, and I said, of course I can. And they say, great, we'll need it in a year. And you have to learn to crank. You have to learn how that you can't spend 6 months. If you don't want to go off your rocker, you can't spend just 6 months sitting around thinking about it or writing the first paragraph. You had better figure out how to lay a story down. And literally typing 90,000, 100,000 words takes some time. So flailing is a good way of explaining how I did it at the start, just coming up with a few ideas and then starting to type like a maniac. That didn't work very well. So, because I found myself getting so lost that I didn't have a paddle up the creek, much less any map to get out of there. So I started outlining. Over the years, I have come to outline my stories in greater detail before I start to write. That if I spend a month or two doing that, really getting the idea, the hook for the story embedded, knowing the characters, who's the protagonist, who's the antagonist, what's their conflict, how can I ramp this up, what are the major turning points in the story going to be, figuring out the beginning, middle, and the end. If you see the end, then you can know whether you've actually started in the right place and go back to the beginning. So once I started doing that and outlining, writing a story treatment, I found that I saved myself having to throw away 30,000 words in the manuscript because I'd written something that didn't really stick. And I could get it done in good time. So I've become more organized, more planning, less flailing.
So what's next?
I have a novel. The fourth novel in my Unsub series will be out sometime later in 2023, date to be announced soon. And then more thrillers.
More thrillers. I should ask you too, like, has there been talk of turning Heat 2 into a movie or a TV series?
Michael Mann, epic filmmaker, known for both television and film. He has plans. I'll just leave it at that.
And has the idea of you writing the screenplay come up at all? And is that something you would want to do as well?
I've taken on something new before. Who knows what we'll do next? But, it's in his hands right now.
Okay. Well, thank you so much. It's been a pleasure having you on the show today. Really appreciate it.
Thanks for having me.
My name's Matt Reynolds, a legal affairs writer with the ABA Journal in Chicago, filling in for your usual host, Lee Rules. If you enjoyed today's show, please rate us on your favorite podcasting app.